Yo, what's up, everyone? Excited to have my boy Evan Pham, who is a senior account manager at Reddit. We met through Landmark. I partially did the Introduction Leaders program with him, and we met through a lot of Landmark programs, which, for those of you who don't know, it's like a personal transformation, one of the most beautiful programs. And, you know, anyone who's in that is typically out to make a difference in the world. And yeah, appreciate you being here and having you on the podcast.
Thanks for having me on here, Davidson, and really appreciate the invitation.
Yeah, man. And I'm super excited for today because there's not a lot of people I know who's as authentic or just as vulnerable as you are, and just really being open about and being okay with just speaking openly about like more of the spiritual and psychedelics and the more exploration side of things. I think people tend to keep that on the DL, but what I appreciate about you is that you're extremely authentic and you are just 100% yourself, right? You don't try to be someone who you don't think about how others will perceive you, like not in a bad way, but like you're just very authentic. And I appreciate that like display of expression, because I think a lot of us filter ourselves depending on which environment we're in. But it seems like for you, you're the same no matter which environment you're in.
Thanks, Davidson. I'm glad I land that way. It comes off as authentic and open, vulnerable, transparent. I mean, to be very transparent, I have massive filters and massive monologues going on in my head that, you know, I there's a lot of ambivalence and a lot of back and forth to, you know, sort out and figure out like what to say, what to put out there for people. But nonetheless, I'm glad that it has been well received by you. And I mean, a few things go into that. Like one, it's always a dance, right? Well, one, you don't want to have too big of an open mouth because, you know, it's context. Who's the audience? Who's okay with me hearing about that? So that's one, got to be careful to some extent. And two, I think a bigger philosophy of mine is that what you hide controls you, or, you know, what you choose to keep undercover controls you. And that's something that I've always been mindful of. That's why I've never been a great liar as well, because I just, you know, there's the whole matter of integrity, and you're incomplete when you lie or you're withholding. And that just doesn't sit well with me. So my best strategy has always been to just be open, be vulnerable, and share share what I'm dealing with, just because it helps me. I got nothing to hide. I got nothing to stress about. And you know, usually people like it.
That's interesting what you said about, my version of that is like what you resist persists. Not sure if that's like taken from Landmark, but I feel like all these are kind of all integrating now. So
it's common, right? But that's for sure.
Yeah. And yeah, I think that's where we're very similar. Like I'm a horrible liar. Like it eats me. I can't sleep. Right. So I appreciate that about you. And it's just interesting how, from your perspective, you think that you still filter things, because that's just not my experience of you, but not in a bad way. Just like I said, in like a real raw, authentic way, you know?
Yeah. Thank you. And again, I'm glad it comes across that way. I think it takes a lot of work. Definitely takes work to just, again, dance between those conversations and use tact, right? You know, I don't want to like unload all my emotions on you, because who the hell wants to deal with that? Like,
yeah,
it's not very kind either sometimes too. Like, hey, Davidson, I'm having a rough day. Like my girlfriend divorced me, or my dog kicked me out of house. I don't know, whatever you might call it. And you just unload it there and expect the person to clean it up. Like it's not, there's timing and tact to it as well. And, there have been few instances where I ask, like, hey, do you have enough space and energy for me to vent right now? And it's good to ask that. Not everyone wants to hear your shit. Not everyone wants to hear my shit and deal with it. So I think I had to learn. Let's just put it that way, dude. Like, you know, you gotta learn, some constraints and some how to be tact.
That's interesting. You mentioned that word because I was told once that was an area of opportunity for me.
Nicely put, like, you suck at it, so work on it.
Yeah. To be more specific, as a sales rep, right? Sometimes we tend to be the spaces, like invading other people's spaces, whether it's time or whatever it is, right? We ask for permission. We're asking for something usually. And that was kind of reflected to me that was not very tactful. And I was like, oh, and that still like resonates with me today. Cause I was like, whoa, like, so
that's good. That's good, man. And, well, first off, kudos to whoever gave you that feedback, cause I'm sure it made a real difference. And two, let me ask you this. Like, how did you respond to that sort of feedback?
To be honest, like, it definitely, hit me. Like, it was like, I was like, whoa. It made me reevaluate things. And the takeaway from that, now that that's years later, is that never bash your competition, never speak poorly about anyone, because that's what it was ultimately. The way I went about it, like, now I can see that showed my character, right? Like, so that's how I relate to a lot of, like, if anyone speaks poorly about their managers or anyone, that I view it as like, I don't think anything of that person because I haven't had an experience with that person yet. So I don't want to dilute that experience. I try to be a blank slate. It's impossible to be 100% blank slate, right? But that's what I strive for. So now I'm very conscious. I'm very careful about ever speaking poorly about anyone or anything, but I'm not perfect at the same time.
Dude, that's such an important thing to recognize, and good thing you got that. And I'm sure in your own journey, whether it be through Landmark, whatever, like, we've talked about gossip, right? And maybe we could talk about that for a second, but that is right up the alley of gossip. And it has many facets. And maybe, I take it maybe a bit more seriously than others. Maybe not enough. I think maybe I need to take it more seriously. And what do I mean by that? Well, I personally don't gossip about people. Like, I seldom do have anything bad to say. If I do share something about someone, usually it's to uplift them in some way or reference something. And I would say, like, hey, well, like, this is something we talked about. And if I know, and this is coming through tact as well, right? Like, I know that they would be fine with me referencing this from them or quoting them. But, so that's one thing, right? Like, you don't want to talk shit about people. Because why? Because let me take an example right now. I'm not gonna say names here, but I was hanging out with someone recently, and she was talking about, her family's history, like father and mother dynamics, and with her mother, she's got some history. And she shared a lot, and I really appreciate her vulnerability and openness. And I think it helped her heal just to talk about that. And I could tell her, like, give her some good compliments and remarks about their relationship, and she appreciated it. But I can't help but, like, oh shoot, like, because she shared that with me, my lens is painted about her mother. The next time I see her, I'm just going to think like, oh shoot, like, is she like the evil tyrant that my friend has been talking about? And, I'm pretty responsible. I'm not going to like let that affect me, but it's there. My listening for her has changed me even before I even got to meet her. So gossip can be really destructive. And where I can take it more seriously. Okay. So I don't gossip about people typically, mostly. Maybe I talk shit about my friends just because they're my friends, like in a more nonviolent way or for fun. But when I'm like, for example, at work, like, my human beings like to gossip, and I like to fit in because I'm human. And, they might gossip about, certain coworkers and each other. And I'm like, you know, I listened in and I joined, and I don't take a proactive approach at stopping them from doing that, because I don't want to be that guy either. But it's just, maybe that's an area of opportunity for me to develop, like learning, like maybe if you and I were one-on-one, because I'm comfortable with this, you might be like, hey man, like my cousin is just being a real dick, and I, you know, like whatever. And I would be like, all right, Davidson, listen, like, because we have that language and that training, I could be like, all right, Davidson, let's, I get it, man. Sounds tough. What are you going to do about it? Let's talk about it. But otherwise, let's not gossip, right?
Yeah.
And keep each other accountable that way.
I love what you said. Yeah. And the area of opportunity, well, it's interesting, right? Like, should we kind of be like, because I've had this kind of thought too, where like, let's say like Black Lives Matters, for instance, right? Or Stop Asian Hate, right? I was almost like, when people didn't say anything and they didn't take a stand, I would almost make them wrong. Like, I'd be like, hey, like, if I saw someone get raped or punched in the face, like, I would do something. But, you know, by doing nothing, that's saying something. But then I realized like how judgmental that sounds in me even saying that, you know? So I don't know, you know, it's hard to know what's really, I guess there's no right or wrong, but I think I'm very strong in my stance.
Yeah. So how do you deal with that, Davidson? Like, what's your strategy or approach now when, you know, these sensitive topics come up about race, discrimination, these mainstream topics, how do you deal with it now? Like, do you still catch yourself in moments of judgment or process that in a different way, or what?
I think if people are curious, they'll reach out, and then I'll usually share a story about how it's really has impacted me, like how a microaggression has impacted my me personally, you know. But yeah, and now I guess I don't preach as much. It's more like with my close friends who are genuinely curious, I'll kind of share like a perspective.
Yeah, that's you're preaching to the choir, you know, referencing that. Like I was one, am I allowed to say the F word?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Just checking. You know, I was one righteous motherfucker, and you know, we all go through a phase where we think like, you know, this is the way the world should be, and this is how it's the right thing to do. And you know, I always saw myself as, you know, on moral high grounds, or even the dumbest things, like what to eat, diet, how to like take care of yourself, you know, things you should or shouldn't do, what, you know. And you know, just, I think as you get older, or as I got older, like kind of like learn to pick your battles. Learn to pick your battles. And also and you know, there's, what do I know, dude? Like what do I know? I don't really know anything to tell someone to live their lives. Like all my ways of living are best guesses, are guesses at best, you know? So in regards to like Black Lives Matter and Asian Lives Matter, or whatever lives matter, someone's going to give me some shit for that.
Yeah, I was going to say, nowadays, yeah. Like, I feel like we always have to be careful about what we say now, right? It's like...
Yeah, okay, I'll take the heat. And, you know, pick your trending, you know, moment of discrimination, racism, serious stuff in all seriousness that affects a lot of people's lives. But you know, I had this conversation at our company where I think there's one takeaway I had from these conversations internally with a group of Asian Americans is that I try to hold two competing thoughts. One of the competing thoughts is that, I'm trying to get my hands on the screen. One of the competing thoughts is that nobody owes me anything and nobody's obligated to do anything. And what that means is like, if I'm getting beat up and Davidson, you're on cross street, like step in or step out, whatever. It's none of my business. Like, you know, the best truth that I can go with is that that guy over there is doing his best in the moment. And I can be at peace with that. Now, a friend of mine, she said, I disagree with that. I don't think that's the way to go about it. And it got me thinking, and I realized, and I'm glad she challenged that idea, because I realized it's very one-sided, because there's another side to it, which is that the competing thought is that, yeah, we should always strive to be better, and we shouldn't, you know, it's like police brutality. Yeah, this is the best we've got. America's standards are pretty good in terms of corruption. But you know, we can't stop there. We got to strive for better, you know? So yeah, we got to do better. We need to do better. And two, also, nobody owes me anything. No one needs to give me shit, because I'm not entitled to that.
That's deep. That's deep, man. Yeah. It there's no right or wrong, right? That's the beauty of this work. It's like, you know, like, I'm definitely more like your friend who's like, hey, if I see something, I'm going to say something. But that righteousness and who I'm being about it, like, is it going to be effective if I make that person feel like an ass? Probably not, right? Mm-hmm. But if I have a good relationship with that person, and you know, he might have said something that I perceived as a microaggression, you know, I might say something, right? But I actually have to have that relatedness first, or else nothing is ever going to land, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, they're not obligated to do that, but at the same time, you don't want to stand by and let that slide, because that's, you know, that goes, that maybe there's a moral component, there's an integrity component, but yeah, I'm sure you wouldn't want to stand by that.
Yeah, man, we're talking about some deep stuff already.
I can get into it quick, dude. Yeah, and I can also pull back and talk about whatever.
No, I think
like the rager I had on Friday, or like.
Wait, oh, you went to a rave?
Oh, no, I'm saying, you know, I can go deep into whichever hole you want, and I can pull myself out and talk about some rager that I had last weekend, so.
Yeah, well, I am curious as to, because you were West Coast governor for Lambda Phi Epsilon for 5 years. I'm also like you, like really big into, like that was a huge part of my life. I'm curious to, like, if you could summarize, like, folks who have like no context into like Greek and specifically Asian Greeks, how would you classify that, those 5 years of your life?
Well, it was definitely more than 5 years. It was my undergraduate years plus postgraduate years. So I would encapsulate, you know, that duration under that tenure or that career. But I think for mainstream folks, or, you know, just general folks listening to this, I would say it's good leadership training. It's good leadership training, learning how to work with the community and learning to work with several different characters. And it emulates the real world. I learned a lot about business, running organizations, and how to be a good leader, how to be a good manager, how to get, you know, how to move, literally move mountains. And what these mountains look like are like 30 dumb ass knuckle kids who just, you know, do not see your way of doing things. And, you know, just going back to being self-righteous, right? Like, you know, moving mountains like that, or herding cats, is like trying to get all these people to buy in on a better vision than you know, where our current model is at, which is based on, you know, consumption and you know, partying and having fun and all great stuff. But, you know, I had a bigger picture of like wanting us to be better leaders, better men, better boyfriends, better husbands, better fathers, and better community members. Yeah. So that's I consider it great training grounds. And, you know, not everyone's going to have that same Greek life experience or desire. Some people go there just purely for recreation purposes. That's totally fine too. But I use it as a vehicle for other things, more productive. What about yours?
Yeah, you summarized it so beautifully of what I would classify. I think mainstream media, right, or external people would look at it and be like, well, it was a lot of partying, maybe like overconsumption in terms of alcohol and whatever else you want to put in that bucket. But I think you described it extremely well. It was my first real practice at leadership, and really just, you know, how can I get people, like, how can I work with a lot of different organizations, like other groups, so other chapters, and then fundraising. So it was like my first, like, I mean, I did fundraising before, but it was like, I think it taught me how to fundraise, which I think is such a beautiful skill, such a useful skill. And I think we're very similar. Like, I was very self-righteous too, in the sense that I had this grand vision of this vision of what's possible, like mentorship programs, like scholarships and all this and alumni, you know, like I had, but and I did implement like some of that. But yeah, I think, but the reality is, right, like you said, the more people it is, the harder it is to buy, get on board, especially now that like a lot of them have kids and, you know, other priorities, right?
Yeah.
So I saw the beauty of it. And I also saw, like you said, a lot of the more, you know, I guess more hedonistic ways of being.
Oh, good word.
Yeah.
I definitely got a lot out of that during that time, and it still pays off in networking. You know, even now I consider this as well, just because you and I have some relatedness and common ground in that. It's always fun meeting people who have gone onto national board for any of their fraternities, because you're meeting the top 1% of the organizations. The top 1%, not in the party aspect or like drinking aspect. Whatever, but like the ones who actually give a shit want to do something about it. So I'm glad I'm connected with you in that way, like meeting someone that cared or still cares about their organization and does something about it, and not surprised that we click in that sense.
Yeah, it's funny because like I've always felt like really connected to with you, and a part of me died almost like when I left like ILP, the Introduction Leaders Program with Landmark, for those who don't know. Cause you know, I think that was the thing that connected us. Right. So I was kind of like, oh, like I'm embarrassed, like saving face. Like I don't know. It's, I guess sometimes easy for us to avoid and kind of like not have to deal with it. I think like, who I'm being about quitting, right? Like, is something that I'm like, huh? Like, what about that was so hard for me to be with? You know, it's interesting.
And are you complete about that now, or is there anything?
Yeah, I think hanging out with you helped, and I think obviously being back on team, like everyone on my team is all from IL, so we have the same conversations every day. it's kind of like, you know, I'm back in that conversation, I guess. The takeaway was that I noticed like it was even hard to me to be with you all during graduation, because I made it mean that like I failed and you guys didn't, you know? So that was like something to be responsible for as well.
For sure, dude. If I were in your shoes, I would feel the exact same way. And it's like a very human thing to do. And the best we can do for now is like making sure that you're complete about it and you're not dragging any like ball and chain and punishing yourself for it, because that's not helpful for you or anyone, right?
Yeah. And in a way, like where I was, like it was what I needed, and just kind of having faith and trust that like I'm smart, right? This decisions I make are for a reason, and just acceptance, right? At the end of the day, which I feel like we talk about acceptance a lot.
Totally, dude. Yep.
Yeah. Wow. Well, this is like a weird transition, but I'm really curious about like what made you so curious to like start to go on this spiritual journey. Like, do you think is because like you're trying to heal trauma, or do you think it's just you're just naturally a curious person, so you kind of just like exploring like other aspects of yourself?
Both of them. And I love sharing the story, just how I got onto this journey. And it started back in I was trying to dig for this email, but I think it started roughly back in 2014. I organized a mastermind group of a bunch of actually Lambdas, a bunch of national board guys, people who I really respected. Mm. And we got together and we talked on the phone every 2 weeks or 4 weeks. I don't remember the cadence.
Mm.
And we were talking about, you know, books or whatever you want to bring to the conversation.
Like,
it's your turn. You could talk about culture, race, a book, a TED talk, whatever. And, I actually missed that. I missed that sort of format. And I'm proud of myself for taking that initiative 7 years ago. So one of the conversations not sure what it was about, but one of my friends, his name is Charles, and he asked me, Evan, do you love yourself? And it was kind of an odd question, especially, you know, for a fresh grad, 21, 22 year old. And I was thinking like to myself, what kind of dumb question is that? Like, yeah, of course I love myself. Like, who the hell doesn't? And he pushed back and he asked once more, inquired once more. And I'm glad he did. Because he asked again, and he asked, no, Evan, do you really love yourself? And I took a good look at myself to see what evidence I could find. And I looked at my life and who I was at the time and what I had to my name and what I had under my belt. And I realized, wow, like, you know what? I don't love myself at all. In fact, I hate myself. I detest myself. I detest, you know, who I am. I thought I was no good, not good enough, and didn't have enough. Had nothing to my name, had no accomplishments worthy, you know, to validate my existence. You know, extreme words, but, you know, those were extreme thoughts at the time. So that was a real eye-opener. And that's where my journey started. You might call that as an awakening of some sort. Why? Because I woke up to reality that, like, wow, Evan, the school you went to, the jobs you've taken on, the relationships you had, the dreams you were chasing, they were all designed for the purpose of building myself up. And they were constructed on fear of not being good enough, not whatever enough, insert word, not successful enough, not wealthy enough, not tall enough. I don't know. Whatever. And yeah, that's where my journey started. From then on, I remember after I read a book called The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle, and that book transformed my life. I'd love to go see him this November if possible, because he's an old dude and I don't know how long he'll be around. I would love to see him live. And then I read many books after that, and then I explored the psychedelic realm along with many psychedelic substances. And went to Peru for 2 weeks to work with ayahuasca and ayahuasqueras down there, or people that work with them. And you know what? It's been a wild, wild, crazy ride since 2014. And I'm happy to report that it seems to me that the work is paying off, in a sense where I'm at now. I could say, like, I don't have much more than I have, like, let's say, like 2-3 years ago. This is an interesting thing. Like, if I look at myself now compared to myself 2 years ago, I might even say I have less stuff. I have less money, less stuff, less wealth, but I'm drastically happier, drastically more content, and much more at home with my own self and who I am and where I am in this world and where I'm going. Like, I'm pretty excited about life, and it took a lot of work to get here.
That's beautiful, man. Thanks for sharing and being open. I can relate on so many levels. I think I'm similar, like, in the sense that I really didn't not love myself. Like, you know, it's sad because everyone else loved me, you know, but it was because I was I catered to everyone else, right? I would just be, I was being a people pleaser. So of course people would love me. I dropped everything I did to help others. Right. And there wasn't a lot of, I just didn't know who I was, I think, like, similar to you, psychedelics, like, really helped me, like, look at a lot of, and then I'd relive some of the trauma. So it helped me process, like, some traumatic, or what I perceived to be traumatic moments in my life. And then also it just had me see, I know not too long ago we did the heart opening ceremony, but it helped me, for instance, like, step into my parents' shoes and to understand how hard it was to have a child at that age and what they sacrificed to have me. And putting their lives on stop to kind of have these, to care for these three children, right? So now I'm much more compassionate, and I can understand my parents better, whereas before I was just thinking about me, you know. Yeah.
Well, what a profound discovery for you. And I'm curious, I shared my pivotal moment in life that skyrocketed my life in the direction of kindness, love, and compassion. Do you recall a particular moment that was your pivotal moment of inflection?
So your pivotal moment is when your mastermind asked you, do you love yourself?
Exactly. Yeah. I would say that's it for me.
Wow. That's profound how just a simple question had like such a big impact.
Right. Actually, I never thought of that. And that's why I think it's so important for us to ask people good questions and help them discover it for themselves, because if someone had interjected and said like, dude, Evan, like you clearly don't love yourself, you know, I would have like resisted and be like, what the fuck are you talking about? You don't know what you're talking about. You don't know who I am. You don't know what I've been through. Like, you don't know. Look at all my accolades and successes. What do you know? Anyway, but the fact that a friend was good enough to pose a question, and I had the opportunity to look and discover for myself, I owned it. So thank you for pointing it out. That was a question. It was a woke question or something.
Yeah, it's so interesting how the power of, because most people, when you ask that same question, they would talk about an experience or like, you know, maybe the plant medicine or like more of the actual something drastic, right? But for you, it was like just a question was enough. It didn't have to be that all the extra stuff, you know.
Wow, I never thought of it that way. So lucky me. But what about you, Davidson?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think for me, the most pivotal moment was I went through this coaching program prior to Landmark called Accomplishment Coaching. So it wasn't it wasn't just one moment, but it was the fact that I was crying 300 out of the 365 days that had me like really present to like, wow, okay, my life is not where it could be or where I want it to be.
300 of your 365 days of it?
Yeah, it was a year long program, so it was like really intense.
Were you chopping onions in there the whole time? Or
no, it was beautiful because everyone, all my other participants, were like shared about all their stuff. So I was crying with them, like just kind of really being with all of that sadness and all of the trauma that, you know, rape victims have gone through, and you know, people that just have gone through a lot. So that was part of it. Oh, but actually, dude, oh my God, this is crazy. Now that you mentioned, actually, there was a defining moment, actually.
Let's hear it.
Yeah. I think I might've shared this with you, but not everyone else knows. There was a Lambda bro. So for those of you who don't know, Lambda was our rival fraternity. They're also an Asian fraternity. But he took IPEC coaching. So he was completing his coaching program and he offered a sample session. And I remember taking that first session with him and it blew open my mind, because I realized that like, I was like it was that pivotal moment that I was like very depressed. I was overweight. I was not happy at my job. I wasn't close to family. Like I had a lot of debt. Like it was just like a very low point in my life. I just felt depressed and I had like not a lot of stuff going for me. And then when he gave me that sample session, he just believed in me and he really just like he was able to see that I was capable of so much, you know? So his name is Chris Wong. Milk Dud is his pledge name.
Go on.
Yeah, he's a really cool dude. But anyways, like he was just like relating to me as much more powerful than how I related to myself. And then that was when I kind of saw like, whoa, like someone else is listening to me much more powerfully than how I see myself. And that kind of like, it's like, oh, maybe there's a disconnect between how I see myself and what's possible compared to like how others like see me. And that started me on this whole journey of like everything.
Wow, dude, that's dope, dude. And I mean, it's so such a heartfelt story that, you know, you're down and out, not enrolled in your life, not excited by life. You weren't really loving your life either, it sounds like. And this person had a bigger listening for you, and that got you thinking that maybe you're bigger than you think you are.
Yeah.
Have you ever told him that, or have you kept in touch with him?
Yeah, I've told him. Yeah. I think he appreciates it. You know, I tell him all the time. I think it's always like that person that has had that much of a difference, sometimes uncomfortable for them to be with that praise sometimes, you know? So.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm sure you've gotten it several times in your life too, Davidson, right? Like, I mean, there've been a few times, there's probably more, but I don't give myself enough credit for it. But there's people have come up to me like, Evan, I, you know what you said to me during that one day at Rush, like that just made the biggest difference for me in helping me decide what to do and all. And I was like, you're welcome. I don't remember.
Well, at least you say you're welcome. Like, that's like better than me. I would just be like, no, that was all you. Like, I had nothing to do with that, you know?
Oh, okay. Well, then I guess that's something for you to take a look at. And
yeah,
I don't know. It may, but you know, you're not wrong either. Like, you maybe helped them discover something, and maybe it was all of them, or maybe you're part of it and say, hey, like, you know, you could say you're welcome. Share that with someone else.
I like yours better. You welcome is much, I think, much better.
but you know, you saw my face too. I'm kind of like,
right. They're still not willing to own it like 100%. Yeah.
I mean, I think we're good at that, right? Maybe a bit too much humility and not willing to take responsibility for our power.
Yes.
Yeah, man, that's dope. I'm glad you shared that moment, and it's like that moment, you know, that moment that unlocked it all, that the moment of inflection that kind of changed the trajectory of our lives. It's always fascinating to hear that.
And I'm curious, because I'm sure this is probably a lot of people that haven't dabbled in this probably ask you all the time, or I don't know if people have asked you, but I mean, you know, I hear ayahuasca can be a literally, like, it's hard to even describe like that experience, but you know, what do you think, if you can put it into like human words, like how would you describe that amazing trip to Peru?
I want to preface first off and say that I think it was Terrence or Dennis McKenna, one of those psychedelic juggernauts, but really like drugs/medicine. I don't really like to say drugs all the time because, you know, it's a terrible connotation of what these actually are, but medicine or plant medicine, you know, they show us what's possible. They show us potential. And, you know, these aren't silver bullets. They're not designed to you know, resolve all of our angst and traumas. You know, we still got to put into work, but what it does is gives us a look into what's possible. Like, oh wow, like on ayahuasca, on mushrooms, or on some other entheogen or mescaline, like San Pedro or peyote. Mm. And what these medicines, spiritual plants do is that they show us what's possible. Like, oh wow, this is what's life like if I'm joyful, at peace, loving this moment, absolutely present. And then, you know, as soon as it resides, like some of it sticks, some of the insight sticks, but, you know, it's up to us to work towards that as well afterwards. Like, oh, okay, that's what it looks like. Now I got to work back up to it. Where people make a mistake is that, like, you know, they take some sort of external substance, you know, whatever it might be. It might be money, relationship, sex, family, job, or something that is external. But then, you know, when you take it away, then what are you left? You're still back to your old self. So I just want to preface that first off. I think it's important to say. Now, getting back to the original question of, you know, ayahuasca in Peru, well, when I went down there, I just heard of it. I heard of it in the ether or through the internet at the time. And this is back in 2015 or 16, so pretty early on. And funny story, like I was looking for, like, okay, how the hell am I going to find an ayahuasca center in Latin America? Well, first up, Google. Google. And then I looked up ayahuasca retreats, and then sure enough, I found it on TripAdvisor, and I found one spot had 5-star reviews, I chose this spot out of many because I looked at each of the comments and the reviews, and the manager had responded to each of them. And I just thought that's a good sign of customer service.
Mm.
So, you know, my yelping powers came in handy. And so I decided to go with that one because I figured that they'll take care of me first and foremost. So I booked it. It's like $150 a night. Pretty good if you ask me.
Yeah.
Lodging, medicine, everything covered. Went down to Peru by myself. gave some information to my family members, my cousins. I said, hey, like, if I don't come back from the jungles in 3 weeks, have the army come look for me. And I went there, and it was not a delightful journey. It was pleasant in a lot of ways, actually. It was a lot of fun, but it was hard work. It was exhausting. And it took a lot out of me. It drained me. 2 weeks coming back, I was in between jobs. I was supposed to start a new job, and I came back. Oh my goodness, dude. I need another 2 weeks just to integrate. You know, there's a word, integrate. When you go through an intense experience like that, you need time to just process it. Instead, I this is probably a mistake now that I think about it, but I started my first day maybe like 1 or 2 days later after coming back from the Amazonian jungles, sleeping in like a solo cabin with riddled with mosquitoes and tarantulas and millipedes and mushroom fungus growing out of floor after a heavy rainfall and creatures crawling around at night. I couldn't sleep many nights because I hear like there'd be like thousands of eyes watching me. It felt like I didn't know if I was going to survive for next morning. I had to hope for the best and just go to bed and hope that I wake up. Seriously.
Whoa.
And maybe I'm being overdramatic, maybe not, but that's what it was. And it was exhausting. Did a lot of ceremonies, learned a lot about myself, learned things like, you know, tell the truth, be honest, integrity. Mm. And integrity has lack of integrity in a weird way, had a way of physically manifesting in my body. Supposedly, like, when I like purged from doing a dieta, I'll tell you that actually, dieta was much more impactful compared to the ayahuasca. Dieta is like no visualizations, no feelings of euphoria, no happy gnomes or kaleidoscope visions anywhere, but it was just like brute force, vile black drink where you drink it and you purge and then you're writhing in pain for the next several hours. And I drank 7 of those, which the guy was baffled, like, you got some warrior energy in you. Like, nobody does 7 first off. They usually do three first off. But I'm the knucklehead I am. I decided to choose 7. And I would bet and wager that you'd be a person that would take on 7 as well if you ever went to the spot. Just because we're idiots.
I'd probably start with 4 and then the next.
Okay, maybe I'm the only idiot here. That actually healed me so much. It got rid of purged a lot of energy in the bile. It was like all this green shit. And like, I'm not a scientist. I'm going to take it with a grain of salt, but he said, like, this is a result of you, like, not speaking up and not telling the truth. Like, it kind of feels like this, like, mucus collects in you. And like, you know, drinking and eating a lot of processed foods and stuff like that. So anyway, I ramble on, but that experience was comprised of ayahuasca, dieta, coca leaf ceremony, and vegetarian food, and coaching as well. Like, lots of things.
Dude, that's incredible. Thanks for sharing. Wow, you said that was more impactful than the ayahuasca. That's fascinating.
And that's why I prefaced beforehand as well. Like, these things aren't silver bullets. Like, you can get your own transformation through like nature, probably like camping and getting away from phones and technology for 14 days. Like, that can give you profound insights too, and there's some work involved. It definitely helps. It gave me gave me a lot of wisdom, that's for sure. And but the work's not done, Davidson. The work is not done. There's still more to be done. But I'm in a much better spot thanks to the culmination of everything I've done in the last near decade.
Yeah, I like what you said about, you know, you can really have a great impact, like even nature or just being on top of a mountain, or, you know, it's I think it's a combination of everything, right? Like for me, meditation has had a really profound influence on me. Landmark obviously is up there in the top, top 10. It's there's so many ways to transform. But I do think like spirituality is one of those like really intense experience, like, or psychedelics is one of those like really intense experiences that honestly like have permanently changed me. I would say if I was to summarize it, I felt like just like a much more oneness with the universe and felt very connected to like nature and, you know, the world, the universe, stars, like people. Like I just felt there was, my ego dissolved a little bit.
I love that. Yeah. There's definitely a oneness aspect to all of these experiences. And what that also translates to is just absolute presence, right? Like we become one with the moment and the reality. That's presence. And also another definition of love is the fullness of presence. Like Davidson, you and I right now, we're feeling, you know, love in the sense of fullness of presence right here and now, because we're just focused on having this conversation and connecting with each other and listening and not trying to think about everything else. So in a way, this is, you know, we don't feel like a need for anything else. Like we feel complete in this moment because we're present. We don't feel incomplete unless there's some, you know, some demons or some shit we got to deal with. But right.
Yeah. I feel like you were always pretty good at being present, right? Like I'm sure many people would say like, that's one of your strengths, right?
Man, I do a good job deceiving people.
Really? That's not your experience of yourself?
Yeah. You know, again, we talked about this even before the call, right? But I just think you're like that milk dud, you know, having a good listening of me. And, you know, like as we learn the communication, we create each other in our own listenings, right? And thank you for mentioning that. And if in my head, of course, me knowing myself and all the crazy chatter and the monologue that goes on in my head, I work really hard to make sure to be that person for someone else, be calm and reliable and dependable and at ease. I want to make sure to bring peace to people, not bring agitation or misery or worry or suffering. So I'm glad it comes across that way, you know, at the end of the day.
That's fascinating. Yeah. I mean, it's just so obvious for me, but I guess, like you said, right, sometimes we listen to others differently than how we listen to ourselves. I had the same reaction when I took this test, and then my number three, like biggest strength that according to the test that I took. So it was me, like, but essentially the test said unconditionality, which is essentially just an unconditional love is one of my biggest strengths. And I was like, mind blown. I was like, how is that even on there? Like, that's totally not how I listen to myself. Right.
Oh, interesting.
So I was just like, I was just jaw dropped. Like, I was just like, what the fuck? And I kind of sensed that same reaction from you when I said that. I was like, wow, like, that's so crazy, you know?
Yeah, that's and likewise, man, I mean, as far as I know you, like, you do strike me as a person that is, you know, I wouldn't be surprised, let's say, if unconditionality was something that came up for your results, just because, you know, the Davidson I know is like someone that hustles, gets things done, does things for the Asian American community, does things for the Vietnamese community, is a leader in the Asian American professional sales space. So yeah, dude, I mean, when I think of Davidson, my understanding is that like, wow, this guy's a powerhouse, and it seems like he really cares and loves community and being there for people. So, but for you to think otherwise, then, you know, that would be surprising.
Yeah, man. Well, I feel like we could do, I mean, I definitely want to do part two because there's so many more experiences I'm curious about in terms of, but I know, you know, you have the class coming up. But yeah, let's do a part two. Let's do one with Josh Tan. I think that'd be dope.
Oh, oh man. We'll see where that goes. That will be a real, what's the word? Royal Rumble.
Rumble. A real hoot.
Yeah. But yeah, dude, hey, bring on whoever, man. I know you have good taste in, you know, people you connect with. So I'm sure it'll work out great.
Yeah, I think the reason, so I'm, and thanks for creating this, because one of my, I wrote this down in a notebook like a year and a half ago, like right when the pandemic started. So around a year and 4 months ago. But I was like, one of my visions is to dispel the psychedelics as a negative, like the way it's portrayed in media and as society is very negative. And I wanted to be the person that will completely flip that on its head. So this is one step closer towards fulfilling on that vision. So thank you for
great. I'm glad to be your guinea pig in this, and you know, I'll be the first one to take the bullet in moving this movement forward so that everyone can have access to it, and then we lessen the stigma of it, and
yeah,
you know, more Asian Americans or people in general seek this stuff out and, you know, start on their own journey, whether it be through a question or a good friend that is coaching us. And I hope that everyone does. I hope they do cross paths with it at some point.
Yeah, and reach out to either one of us if you want to ask more, if you're curious about more of these experiences. And it sounds like we'll have many more. So I'm looking forward to that. All right, brother. Okay. I appreciate you. Love you, man. And have a good day. Have a good night.
Thank you, Davidson. I love you too. And thank you for this.
All right.